Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the black market right after this. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton, who was a preeminent New York journalist, probably one night back in about 1880, Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet which was given him by the leaders of his craft. Someone who knew neither the press nor Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Swinton outraged all of his colleagues when he said, "There's no such thing in this country at this date of world's history as an independent press, and you know it and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid for similar stories, similar salaries, for similar things, and any one of you who would be so foolish as to write honest opinions would be out in the streets looking for another job. If I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country, and to sell his race for his daily bread. You know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are, he said, the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes." Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and the New World Order, the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers, Bushes, Bundys, Carnegies, and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all of these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible Prophecy, and the New World Order, why don't you call and order my 4-hour compact disc package? It's educational, it's entertaining, informative, best of all, it's free of charge. You can call right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Or if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and then send an email request. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the black market. Last time, we were covering the Magombo Guru, a guy by the name of Richard Doughty. Puts out a newsletter. It's published weekly on Kitco, KITCO.com. It's an easy one, Kitco.com, and then go to Doughty, D-A-U-G-H-T-Y, and you can download it. It's free of charge. Doughty is called the angriest man in economics. He writes a newsletter. He's a pretty funny guy. I think you'll enjoy it. And he, along with a lot of other newsletter writers, you know, like Don McElvaney and Bob Chapman and Bill Buckler and Magombo and a whole host and plethora of others, have been writing newsletters and warning us for many, many years that these insane policies, these economic policies that are being followed by Republicans and Democrats, the Republicrats, or the Demopublicans, however you want to term it, are leading us to ruin. They're leading us into a new world order. They're leading us into a United Nations-dominated world empire, a world government, in opposition to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They've been telling us nobody listens. They're like voices crying in the wilderness. But now, in the year 2005, we're beginning to see the cracks in the plaster. We're beginning to see the results now of all of this inflation. The dollar has been destroyed, past tense. It isn't coming on. It's something that's gone on. The purchasing power of the dollar has gone from 100 cents in 1930 to 3.5 cents in 2005. I would say that's virtual destruction. All we're talking about now is the last 3.5 cents. Is it going to have a soft landing or a hard landing? And are we going to be wiped out overnight? And is this massive transfer of wealth going to take everything that we've got? And how much will we be left with? And what kind of a job are we going to have in the aftermath of this hyperinflation, such as the German hyperinflation of 1923? Or will it be a massive deflation like the Great Depression of the 1930s? These are questions, of course, in everybody's minds, and various people have various opinions and conclusions. Now, if we pay attention to what our venerable leaders, George Bush and Alan Greenspan, are telling us, they're going to turn up the printing presses and we're going to have hyperinflation. And of course, the Mugambu is saying, my God, that's insane. Look at how crazy that is, and look at the results that has always occurred in the past in thousands of years of history. Look what always happens to people, their jobs, their homes, their properties, their lives, when we follow that course of action. And I say, yes, Mr. Mugambu, I understand that. I read those books too. And every one of them turns out to be real bad. It's not good. But then I always say to myself, well, who is George Gordon to get in the way of 280 million happy Americans who want paper money, who want inflation, who voted for George Bush and are tickled to death with their jobs, their outlooks on life, and their Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan? Just because the Mugambu and George Gordon, a couple of misfits who are unhappy and miserable at the happiness and success of the United States of America, the Republican Party, and of the American economy, you know, why should everybody else suffer? So my conclusion was, I think that I would be happy if I could just drop out. So back in 1978, I did just that. I dropped out of Social Security. I spent a little time, effort, and energy looking at our past history. I looked at such things as the black market, the free market, supply and demand, the underground economy. I looked at the Russians and the Germans and the Japanese and at the hyperinflations and the depressions and deflations that have gone on in history. And I said, gee, it looks like to me there's a lot of opportunity here. That for every action, there's an equal opposite reaction. For every piece of property that's taken away from somebody, somebody else gets it. The property doesn't disappear. When a house is foreclosed on, the house doesn't disappear. It doesn't burn to the ground. It gets transferred from the person who's in it today to somebody else. You know, 5 years from now, you come back and I can show you houses that I saw repossessed. There's somebody living in them. Somebody now owns them. Somebody else is collecting the rent. And I thought to myself, well, how could I be one of those? Now, the Mugambu here on, let's see, page 3, he's got a lengthy comment, and he says, but the lure of the free lunch and the self-congratulatory warm glow of smug self-satisfaction that comes from Congress helping thy neighbor, mostly by giving them money and services, but mostly money and mostly my money, is always too strong for the weak minds of the typical congressperson. So the Mugambu is disturbed by and distressed over the Congress using income redistribution by taking Mr. Mugambu's income and redistributing it to some poor person in Harlem, New York, who's obviously in need. And that's the communist socialist way. It's from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. So I looked at that and I said, well, I don't like that either. I don't want to work at my company. I used to run a little company called the Atlantis Manufacturing Company Incorporated. We manufactured furniture, had a string of retail stores and a manufacturing company and a wholesale operation. I sold to stores. I operated retail stores. I operated the manufacturing company. And I had to deal with 28 agencies of government stretched from Boise, Idaho to Washington, D.C. You got to have a city business license, and you got to have an SEC, and you got to have OSHA and the EPA and a federal tax identification number, and you got to have a corporate charter, and you got to have the federal government comes in and they administer unemployment taxes, and the state government comes in, they got an unemployment department, and then you got the Department of Employment, and then you've got people that quit their jobs or they get fired and they go in to draw unemployment insurance, and you got hearings to go to, and you got letters to write, and there's all these government agencies and OSHA and the EPA, and that's the tip of the iceberg. And then underneath that, there's the other 90% of the government regulating and controlling your business. And then I noticed another thing, Mr. Mugambu. I noticed that my company produced $100,000 a month. That's $1,200,000 a year. I got about $100,000 of that, and the government got $200,000. And right away, it was a clear tip-off to me that something was wrong, because I asked the question, what does the government produce? What does the government do that they collect $200,000? And I collect $100,000, and I'm the guy that invested the capital. I'm the guy that takes the risk. I'm the guy that meets the payroll, delivers the furniture, sells the customers, designs the product. What does the government do? Well, they send OSHA inspectors around to find me and to get in the way and to red tag the job and to close the plant down. They sent the IRS out and they took $10,000 out of my bank account on a Thursday afternoon so that all of my payroll checks would bounce over the weekend. I mean, the government wasn't helping our business. They were hindering. They were working against us. If there was any way that they could have harmed or upset, slowed down, or in any way hindered the process of production and the creation of real wealth, there was a bureaucrat from some one of those 28 agencies of government to do that, and sometimes they would send two or three agents from two or three different agencies to do it all at the same time. One day I woke up and I said, my God, I think these people want to put me out of business. And I said to myself right then, why should George Gordon get in the way and interfere with the happiness and success of 280 million Americans who want to close this business down? So I closed it down myself, voluntarily, out of going out of business sale. Everything goes floor to ceiling, wall to wall, regardless of cost, loss, or value. And then when I got through selling everything out, closed the business, stopped production, and stopped employing people and paying wages and taxes. You know, once the company closed, that $200,000 a year in taxes stopped, didn't it? Well, and that tells you and me that everybody else in the country had to make up that $200,000 difference, didn't they? And if we're not going to produce that furniture here in the United States, I guess we can just buy it from the Chinese or the Mexicans or somebody else, can't we? And then doesn't that add to your balance of payments deficit? And how does that benefit America? And how does that benefit Joe Sixpack, who's working for the General Motors Company as an assembly line worker in Detroit? I couldn't figure it out, but then, you know, I'm not a politician, never went to college, and I'm not too smart, just an old country boy. So I went down on the beach for about a year, and I sifted sand through my toes. I didn't produce anything. And I contemplated the lint in my navel, and I counted the hairs on my arms and sifted sand through my toes, and I soaked up the sun. And one day I woke up and I said, I think I'll go back to work. I think I'll go back into production, and I think I'll leave out all the employees, all the corporate charters, and I'm going to leave out all the taxes, all the government and the federal tax ID numbers. I think I'm going to go to work and stop having income. I know it was a novel experiment, and you've probably never heard of such a thing, but you know the income tax taxes your income. And so I got to thinking, and I said, well, listen, I think there was life before income, and there was life before the income tax. I wonder if I could live without income and without the income tax. That was in 1981, and I was right. You can, I did, you can, and you probably would be happier if you did. So I just wanted to point out to you, Mr. Magombo, that instead of giving your money to the government for income redistribution, you could think of a wild new concept. Stop participating in the income-producing sector of the economy, also known as the above-ground economy, and we concentrate on the black market. There's just something magical about those words, isn't it? The black market. I guess the opposite to that would be the white market. And I guess George Bush and the United States government and the IRS and all of the government agencies represent the white market, which I pointed out to you represents about $11 trillion a year. But back here on the farm, there's an underground economy, a free marketplace operating in America. Free market. And that free marketplace produces about 25% of the gross domestic product, which is about 2.75, right at $3 trillion a year. And, you know, you could buy a lot of stuff with $3 trillion a year, and Americans do that. Now, most Americans operate in the underground free market economy. It might be you doing a little job for somebody. You might go over to a friend's house, or you might bring his car over to your house, and maybe you'll do a little work on it and charge him $100. That's the underground economy. And you take millions of people doing these little $100 jobs here and little $100 jobs there, a flea market someplace, selling a bunch of stuff, a garage sale. Those are all activities of the black market, the underground economy. And, you know, you don't look at some guy who's got a garage sale cooking over there and say to yourself, oh, that guy's in the underground economy. That guy's in the free marketplace. Why, that guy's a tax protester, a tax cheat. Why, he's probably not paying his taxes. Most of the time, the government gives you exemptions. For instance, you don't have to have a business license to run a garage sale. You don't have to have a sales tax permit. Now, of course, if you're doing a garage sale every day and so on, well, then that's not a garage sale, that's a business. And if you're dealing with the public and dealing in Federal Reserve notes and checks and credit cards, they want you to get a business license and pay your taxes. But hey, wait a minute. What if we could operate a business and we didn't do business in trade, commerce, business, or industry affecting any public interest? And what if we weren't open to the public? What if we were private? That's a wild new concept. Could you operate a restaurant without being open to the public? Yep, you could. Does anybody do it? Yep, they do. Do you know how to do it? Nope, probably not. Would you like to learn how? I can teach you. I got my hand up and raised. I can run a law school, and I don't have a business license, and I don't have any connecting links with the state, and I'm not open to the public. Now, I come on the air, and I talk to people all the time, and if you write for my free CD package, in my package, I'll talk to you under the First Amendment, and we'll have some conversation, and then if you call me on the telephone, that's private conversation protected by free speech, and you and I can hold a conversation, and maybe we can make a contract under Article 1, Section 10, where government is prohibited from interfering or impairing the obligation of our contracts, and here again, we could do a free market transaction, commonly called the black market, without the government. Now, if on the other hand, I was to go up to the University of Missouri, apply for a job, and they gave me a job teaching, I'd have to have a Social Security number. That would bring me into trade, commerce, business, and industry affecting the public interest, for which I'd have to pay Social Security taxes and income taxes and be regulated and controlled, and I'd have to have a PhD, and I'd have to jump through all these hoops, and I'd be right back where I was when I was making furniture. And that didn't appeal to me, so I thought, well, I'll open up my own law school, and I'll just teach people under contract, privately. I know it's kind of a wild new idea, but that's what the free market's all about. Free market. That means I don't work for General Motors, and I can't work for a corporation, and I don't have any identification. I don't have a driver's license. And right away, somebody will say, my God, you don't have a driver's license. How in the world do you live? And the answer to that is, very well, thank you. I have a chauffeur. I have a driver. There's a hell of a lot more pizzazz sitting in the back seat with a driver driving you around than there is in driving a Corvette. That's my opinion. Now, I don't have a limousine, but I've been thinking about getting one. I think that a man with a chauffeur should have a limo, don't you? The only problem is, back here on the farm, I ain't sure a limo could get down my road, so I'm still running around in my ATVs and my four-wheel drives, but someday maybe I'll have enough money to build a road And if I do, I'll certainly want to have a limousine and for my driver to drive. Now, I'm kind of kidding you a little bit here, but the reason I do that is because I teach a class on business, and I started going through some of these business principles that I follow. And there's 86 of them, and I've been sharing some of these thoughts with you in this series of programs so that you can get a feel for, is there another way to do business in which you could make $100,000 a year or the equivalent thereto in purchasing power without paying taxes, without paying Social Security, without a business license, without having to contract with or be a participant in the government in any way, shape, form, or manner? In other words, could you live your life without the mark of the beast? Which, you know, might not be a bad idea, because Revelation 13:16 tells you that if you've got this mark of the beast, God says he's going to kill you. And the government is telling you if you don't have your mark of the beast, you're going to starve to death. It's kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't. Well, last time I said unreasonable expectations lead to poverty. And I observe people quite often. And many times people will go out and buy a lottery ticket. And so I always ask myself when I enter into a business transaction, what is it that I hope to achieve with this business transaction? And I did that with the lottery ticket, because somebody said to me one time, George, do you buy lottery tickets? And I said, no. And he said, why not? And I said, why should I? And he said, because you could win the lottery and win millions of dollars. And I said, oh my God, now that sounds like a hell of a deal. How much do you have to invest? And he said, just $1. You mean that if I invest $1, I can make millions of dollars? And he said, yes, yes, didn't you know? And it benefits a good cause, public schools. I said, you mean my daughter goes to public schools? Yes, yes, he said. And think of the good that you're doing when you buy a lottery ticket, the daughter goes to the public school, and you can win millions of dollars for that $1 investment. And I said, my God, what a deal. Everybody should get in on this deal. And so I asked him, I said, well, how does this work? And he said, well, you just buy this lottery ticket, and then you just write down six numbers. And if those six numbers come up, you win. That's all there is to it. It's simple. A dunderhead could do it. And I said, well, God, that's me. I'm a dunderhead. Let me do the arithmetic. And I got my trusty Texas Instrument calculator out, and I started looking at what are the chances of me getting six numbers in succession in a row? You know, 1 times 2 times 3 times 4 times 5 times 6? And do you know it's 84 million to 1. So that means that every time I spend $84 million on lottery tickets, I could win 1, 2, 5, or $10 million. But of course, there's no guarantee that after you've bought 84 million lottery tickets that you'll have a six-number combination, because that's called one event. And you could do 2, 9, 15, 27, or 36 of those events of 84 million tickets each and lose every single one of them. I said, now let me see. To guarantee that I win, to get the six numbers, statistically, I've got to do 84 million numbers. Now let me see. How fast can I buy a lottery ticket? And so I looked and I said, it takes me about 5 minutes to buy a lottery ticket, peel off the numbers, and if I did this systematically and got it down to 1 minute, it would be 60 an hour. 60 an hour times 24, 60 an hour times, let me just do this, 24 would be 1,440 per day, times 365 days would be 525,600 lottery tickets if I could do 1 a minute. That, of course, assumes that I've got $525,600, and that leaves me way short of the 84 million, which are the actual odds. My conclusion on the lottery tickets was that it's a bad business investment. I've never bought a lottery ticket, and unless they can get that lottery down to something that makes better money than that, I don't think I'll buy any. It is true, there is a winner every now and again, but gambling is not the best way to make money. And then on top of that, they tax it heavily. And I thought, gee, after I've spent my $84 million, they're going to take half of it in taxes. That made the business transaction even poorer. Now, I'm a businessman, not a gambler. So if you want to gamble, don't let me get in the way of 280 million happy Americans gambling their money away. But don't complain about being poor or poverty-stricken or homeless, or you can't pay your credit card debts. If you can afford to pay a dollar for a lottery ticket, then you can afford to pay your bills. That's the way I saw it. Now, if you can't hang on to it, you don't need to make it. Have you ever watched these grade B movies? And the guy in the grade B movie, you know, he's working for 30 years, and he finally finds the mother lode. He comes into town, buys drinks for everybody in the bar. Then the guy in the bar comes over and hands him a contract and says, Charlie, you've worked hard. Let me help you. He gets the guy drunk, and he signs over the mother lode to the guy in the bar. How many times have you seen that? Well, you know, there's just a business principle that you should follow. If you can't hang on to it, you don't need to make it. Most people who come into money can't hang on to it. I don't know how many people I've seen do that. They'll get a lot of money from an insurance settlement, or they'll get a lot of money from some other source, an inheritance, and in 2 or 3 years, they're flat broke again. They've spent it all, squandered it all. And that's because a man who has money made money. If he made the money, he knew how to make it. A man that knows how to make it, if he can learn how to hang on to it, will develop wealth. A man who makes money and can't hang on it will be poor. A man who comes into money and doesn't know how to make money, doesn't know how to hang on to the money, will squander it all. That's why the old adage that says, a fool and his money are soon parted. Number 27, if you never do business with a thief, you'll never be stolen from. If you always eat the best first, you'll always have the best. Very important business principle. I'm a cherry picker, and I just wait until the best deal comes by, and then I pick that one. I don't have to take every deal that comes up. Remember, you never lost any money on any deal you didn't make. And there's no substitute for diligence and hard work. Americans can't be successful in business because they don't want to work hard. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of people out there that work hard. And there are a lot of Americans out there that make a lot of money. And then they get leveraged out like the contractors do. And here's the way contractors work. A contractor goes out and he borrows money from the bank to build a house. He turns the house over in 6 months, pays the bank off, doubles his money, and goes to the bank and borrows enough to build two houses. And the banker really likes him now because now he turns the two houses over in 6 months, makes twice as much money. The banker is tickled to death and loans him enough money to make four houses. He goes out and does 4, 8, 16, 32. Pretty soon he's doing a big subdivision. Along comes the next recession. The banker quits lending money, calls all of the notes, tells the contractor to pay off. The contractor can't, so the banker forecloses on everything that the contractor has. The bank then goes out and sells it, makes all the profit off of it, and the contractor is back to the one house level. The recession ends. The contractor comes back to the banker and says, loan me some money to build a house, and the banker does. And he goes out and builds two houses, four houses, eight houses, 16 houses, and then he's on to a subdivision just in time for the next recession. The next recession comes along. The banker calls his notes, won't roll them over, forecloses, takes everything, sells it, wipes him out, and this is the life of a general contractor. I know, I'm one of them. I liked old George Patton because he said, it's not how high you climb on the ladder, it's how well you bounce on the bottom after you fall off. Well, I'm a good bouncer. I've been up to the top and down to the bottom three times. It's a hell of a lot more fun up on top than it is at the bottom, but I bounced well on the bottom and I went back up to the top. I'm in the upper sequence of my life's work right now. Number 30, in business, you get what you pay for. That's why I always buy Milwaukee skill saws. You get what you pay for. You buy the good ones, they last a long time. You buy the cheap ones, you buy a lot of them, often. And it costs you a whole lot more. Hey, we're talking about the black market. The black market and 86 business principles. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like to order yours right now, do it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. Send an email request for that free general law CD package. And then, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't represent necessarily the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. Now, for more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org or call the law school, area code 417-273-4967. We're talking about the Magombo Guru. He's a pretty good guy. I'm going to pitch his newsletter. I sent him an email last time. I reviewed his newsletter here, I don't know, a month ago or so. He's a pretty funny guy. Talks a lot about inflation. And I think he's right on point. Right on point. And he's been trying to tell people that this government's crazy, that the economic policies that we're following are insane. And I think most of us, when we take a look at the deficits and the balance of payments deficit, and we take a look at our credit card debts and the leverage in the average price of a home in America today, I think most of us are pretty well convinced that, yes, indeed, this guy's right and the government is crazy. But it's been going on for 70 years, and if it's been going on for that long, who's to say I won't go on for another 70 years? I don't know. I'm not a prophet. God doesn't talk to me. But my common sense says that I just don't think it's going to last 70 more years, but if it does, more power to him. I'll just ride the ship until it finally hits the iceberg, and when it goes to sink, I'm not going to get onto one of the lifeboats because I've already lashed a dozen deck chairs together and put them under a tarp up in the bow of the ship. And when the Titanic hits the rocks and all the people are headed toward the back of the ship, I will be headed toward the front. And as I'm elbowing my way through the crowd, I will be saying, excuse me, pardon me, let me through, please. Excuse me, pardon me, let me through, please. And you'll be saying, you fool, you blind, you nitwit, the ship is sinking by the bow. The bow is underwater. Flee for your life. Flee to the stern. And I will say, excuse me, pardon me, let me through, please. You people go get on the lifeboats. You people go flee to the stern of the ship. I'm going up to the bow. I know what I've got up there. I've got 12 deck chairs. I'm ready for this sinking. I've been preparing for this sinking. I'm not thrilled about the ship sinking, but I'm not terrorized by it either, because I see great opportunity here. Great opportunity. When we take a look in Bible prophecy, we see famine. And that's why I have a farm. And that's why I have food and food production. I can't think of a better business to be in than agriculture and farming and food production in a famine. Can you? And we're in a real estate bubble. I can't think of a better place to be in a real estate bubble than out of real estate and into cash, so that when the bubble breaks, I can take advantage of the distressed property and the distressed prices. I'm a shark circling in the water. I'm not thrilled that all of you people are losing your homes, but after all, I didn't put a gun to your head. I didn't leverage your house. I didn't lend you money at interest. I didn't convince you that you should deal in commercial paper and mortgages and interest and usury in violation of the law of God. Somebody else did that, or you did it yourself. And then there are consequences that flow from that. Great big ships that run into icebergs run into consequences. The ship sinks. In business, you get what you pay for, and a satisfied customer is the best value for your advertising dollar. When a customer comes into my school, I make sure that when he leaves here, that he gets twice as much as I agreed to give him when he came into class. I've got it all programmed out. See, I had one here this week, and it worked out perfectly. Here's what I did to him. He came into class, and we did the $100,000 on 25 acres or less. And I'm sitting here explaining to him how to make $100,000 a year in purchasing power on $7,200 a year worth of gold, so that you don't have to report that to the IRS because it's under the filing minimum, which keeps you in compliance with the IRS and the Congress and with Title 31, Section 5102, 5112, and with the law of God and the law of Moses all at the same time. He was so impressed. He said, you know, that little piece of information right there is worth more than the amount of money that I'm paying for the tuition for this class. And therefore, business principle number 31, a satisfied customer is the best value for your advertising dollar. Now, he has 10 friends, and when he goes home, he's going to tell his 10 friends about how much money he made here while he was going to school, and what neat little tricks and points that he learned here when he came to school, and that it was well worth his time, effort, and energy, and the money that he expended. And that way, I don't have to advertise in the yellow pages, which would put me into commercial business, which would bring the Bureau of Vocational Education in, knocking on my door and asking me why I don't have a business license, like they did some years ago. They came and knocked on my door and they said, why, Mr. Gordon, you don't have a business license. And I said, you're right, I don't. But then I'm not in business. This is a private enterprise, not open to the public. And what in the hell are you doing here? You can't go to school here. I don't want you in my school. Get out. And they left and I didn't hear any more from them. Now, that's not because I'm pulling the wool over somebody's eyes. It's because I'm not doing business with government, and I pointed out the last time that government is a criminal enterprise. And when you do business with criminals, you're probably going to get into trouble. Most people, when I ask them, do you do business with the mafia? They tell me, no, I don't do business with the mafia. I say, why? Because they're criminals. Oh, do you do business with the government? Oh, yeah, I do business with the government. Are they criminals? Oh, no. Most people don't see the government as a criminal enterprise. The IRS took over Mustang Ranch some years back, ran a whorehouse up in Nevada for 16 months, sold it at a profit. Excuse me? And you're telling me that that's not a criminal enterprise running a whorehouse? That that's some kind of a moral, normal business that everyday garden variety folks like us ought to be involved in? And that the government is the place where we should get our morality? And it's the government that licenses the pulpit parrots that sit in our churches and preach morality to us? That it comes from that institution called government? And you're telling me that that's where I should get my morality? And then some guy writes me a letter and says, well, you're not a very good Christian. You use bad words. I wrote him a letter back and I said, hell, partner, I ain't a Christian, and don't you call me one of them criminals. Christians oftentimes break a lot of laws. You ever notice that? I can give you an illustration so that you don't think that I'm totally nuts over here. Let me just show you something here about Christian philosophy. I'm sure that a lot of you good people out there go to church very regularly. I pulled these numbers the other day off the web. Did you know that 65% of Americans go to church? Did you know that 95% of Americans are Christians? And did you know that 70% of Americans subscribe to and pay money every month for hardcore pornography to come into their homes over their television sets? They subscribe to the service. Now, when you put those numbers together, like 65% of 75, and then you take that number, like 65% of 280 million people, just work out the numbers, and you're going to find out that 110 million Christians that go to church every Sunday subscribe to hardcore pornography. I think that's a crime. I don't think that's good at all. I don't want to be associated with people like that. I avoid them like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Did you know that most Americans participate in bribery? It's called lobbying. Lobbying. Nobody sees a problem with Kissinger and Associates giving money and favors to congressmen to affect legislation in our Congress. God calls it bribery. He calls it gifts, bribes, and rewards. It's prohibited in Deuteronomy 16, verses 18 through 20. Let me see if I got another one. Insurance, number 64. Did you know our government sells insurance? Did you know that Social Security is called insurance? It's a lie, but they call it that anyway. And that insurance is called limited liability, and that limited liability is prohibited in the scripture in Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36. Just thought I'd share that one with you. There's 82 of those crimes committed by church-going Christians every single day. Out of 133 titles of law in the Bible, Christians violate 82. 82 of 133. What percentage is that? Let's do it. 82. Divided by 133. Christians are in violation of 61% of the laws in the Bible on a regular routine basis, and they get it right from the government. Well, the good side of it is, though, about 40% of the laws they're in compliance with, 60% they're out of compliance with. Ain't quite 50-50, boys and girls. I don't think that's such a good idea. Well, let's see. Credit business is bad business. Americans like to do business on credit. That's why we have credit cards. Now, credit business isn't against the law, but credit business is bad business. I don't want to finance your purchases. I don't offer credit. Once in a while, I do give credit out, but a lot of the time, I don't get paid. And that's what proves to me that credit business is bad business. And the single most important thing in business is what? Does anybody know? What is the single most important thing in business? Hey, this is worth listening to this program and spending an hour of your time. It's getting paid. The most important thing in business is getting paid. Getting paid is the only reason for business. There isn't any other. And if you think that business is in operation so that they can hire people and keep people employed, oh, no, you don't understand business. Do you think that businesses spring up so that they can provide goods and services to people because the people need the goods and services? No. Businesses don't spring up because I'm real concerned about your legal incompetence. And I didn't open this law school because I'm real concerned about your legal ignorance. I don't care how smart or dumb you are. Neither do you care about me. But what we all care about is getting paid. Now, you know, if we don't do credit business and we all get paid and we don't invest more or we don't risk more than we can afford to lose and we follow these business principles that, by and large, come right out of the Bible, called the black market by government, called the free market or supply and demand. It's called property. Thou shalt not steal in the scriptures. You'll make a lot of money and you'll get wealthy. And when we Americans practiced these business principles from 1787 to 1913, we became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world, practicing the black market, the free market, supply and demand, the underground economy, we call it today. And then in 1913, we created the Federal Reserve System. We went bankrupt in 1933. And from 33, we took our gold out of circulation. And from 1950 to the year 2000, we have now become the world's number one debtor nation. We were the world's number one creditor nation. Now we're the world's number one debtor nation. Our money, which was worth 100 cents in 1930, is now worth 3.5 cents today in 2005. I say that's a giant step backwards. But I don't want to get in the way of the happiness and success of the rest of you 280 million Americans out there. But I thought I would share with you. You guys ride this ship to the bottom of the ocean. I'm getting off. I don't want to participate in this program with you. And by the way, I have a business school that I teach people how to do this crazy kind of business, the kind of crazy business that Moses trained us in. You won't find this supply and demand private property business in church. They don't teach it there. They teach communism and socialism in church. That's right, communism and socialism. You're not going to find biblical economics in church, but you'll find it in the scripture. And if you'd like to know where, you just send and ask for that free general law CD package. And let me tell you a little bit more. Let me see if we can put you through our business school. And you too, Mr. Magombo, instead of complaining about inflation and the buttheads in Congress, you'll be saying to yourself, oh, thank God for the buttheads in Congress. Look at the opportunities that these fools are creating for people like me. I know it's mercenary, but then I didn't make it that way. Number 35, if you need a license to do your business is a criminal activity. Just go to Bouvier's Law Dictionary, look up the word license, and it's permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. All of the professions are criminal activities, you know, like lawyers and doctors and preachers. Yeah, they're all criminals, and they all have licenses, and they're criminals by definition. They get permission from the government to violate the law of God. On the other hand, there are common law occupations for which you don't need a license, you know, like a farmer. That's what I am, a farmer or a teacher. I don't need a license to be a teacher. I don't need a license to be a farmer. And that's because farming and teaching is not a criminal activity. 36, there's nothing wrong with making a good profit. I don't know how many times I read in papers and in treatises, you know, they'll point to Enron and they'll point to some company or corporation. They say, oh my God, their profits are just obscene. Well, I got a copy the other day. My boy, he's a computer whiz. And I said, could you get me the Dow Jones Industrial Averages for the 30 companies on the Dow? And he did. And he brought them in. And there they are. They're right there on the web. You can get them yourself. And you know the most profitable company in America today is Microsoft. And do you know how much profit they made? 25%. 25 or 26. The three best companies were General Electric, General Motors, and Microsoft. They were making around 25-26%. Now let me tell you something, boys and girls, I wouldn't get out of bed for 25%. If you called me on the phone and you said, Mr. Gordon, I have a business deal and you can make 25% profit, I'd say, you got to be out of your cotton picking mind. You want me to invest money? You want me to risk my money in this business venture for 25%? And that's the Dow Jones. And that's the three most profitable companies. The rest of them all losing money. Or they're bankrupt. Take a look at their financial statements and ask yourself if you'd want to invest money in IBM or in Xerox with the kind of debt structure that they have. Just, you know, knock off a bunch of zeros so that it gets down to where you are working, you know, for $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year instead of, you know, $300, $400, or $500 million a year. Take a look at the debt structure, knock off the zeros, put your percentages together, and then say, and you're telling me that this Dow Jones Industrial Average, these blue chip companies, are worth investing in? Most of them couldn't qualify for an SBA loan. Most of them on the Dow Jones Industrial Averages have debt structures that are so disproportionate to their income that if they went to the Small Business Administration and said, lend me money under the terms and conditions that you would lend it to a guy who's got five employees and is running a cleaning establishment, they couldn't qualify. And you people are investing your money in those stocks, in those companies. You're investing your money with mutual funds who invest your money in those companies. And you call that business? I call that BS. That's what I'd call it. Again, you know, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. I would invite you, though, and unless you're brain dead, go to the web, pull off Dow Jones, take a look at the financial statements of the 30 companies on Dow Jones. Now, they're not all that way. Microsoft is solvent. General Motors is solvent for now. And Ford isn't solvent. And Chrysler, Daimler. Chrysler wasn't solvent. They are now because they were taken over. And then look at Xerox and General Electric. General Electric is solvent. Xerox isn't. And then take a look at the rest of them, and you'll find out that about half of them are insolvent. Just crazy nonsense. You know, a business is like a ship, and it has room for only one captain. The United States government runs by committee, and that's why it doesn't run very efficiently. And businesses have to be run like a dictatorship. I run a business here. This is a dictatorship. I speak and everybody else jumps. One time I had a business seminar. It was about 1990 or 91. It was the year that Ford Motor Company lost $1.7 billion. And I came into the seminar and I said, my name is George Gordon and I teach business in private business and I made more money this year than Ford Motors. And it's because I ran my company better than Ford ran their business. This year Ford lost $1.7 million and this year I made a profit. I make more money than Xerox does. I don't have any employees. Ford at that time had 345,000 employees. Man, they had manufacturing plants all over the world. You know, just because you're some kind of a big operator doesn't mean you're making any money. The United States government is a big operator, and they're flat-ass broke, and they got no money, and they're trying to take what you've got. I just don't want to give them what I've got. So remember, a business is like a ship. It's only got room for one captain, and in business, there is no substitute for experience. I always marvel at the chief executive officer of the United States of America. He's called the President of the United States. You know, you pick one of them every 4 years. What experience do these people have at running this big organization called the United States of America? Huh? Why, you wouldn't hire a fry cook to work in a Waffle House with the kind of experience that you're electing your president with. You'd want to test this guy and say, hey, can you make waffles? I mean, you're going to work at Waffle House. Can you actually make a waffle? Are you a cook? How long have you been a cook? Are you a chief executive officer? How long have you been a chief executive officer? How many nations or countries have you been operating? I'm telling you, boys and girls, you know, the United States is in bad economic and serious financial straits because of the fools that you elect to office. These people don't have any experience. George Bush, for crying out loud, is probably the least competent fellow that's ever held that office. If there was one that was less competent than George Bush, could you send me an email and let me know who he was? Well, it's like a race to the bottom. You know, we've been talking about that around the school, trying to figure out, is there a president of the United States that has been less competent, more poorer for the country than George Bush? We'd like to figure out who it is. We think he holds the record. You know, good business is based on performance, not trust. People will say to me, well, why don't you just send me the school and trust me to send you the money? And I say, why don't you send me the money and see if you can trust me to send you the school? I'll bet you that there's more people out there that have gotten my school after I received the money than I have received the money after I sent the school. And like I say, boys and girls, business is business and BS is BS. And I'm not much into BS, but I'm all for business. Now, all wealth comes out of the ground. That's number 40. All wealth comes out of the ground. It's kind of like saying that the world owes you a living. but you got to work like hell to collect on your receivables. So now that I know where the wealth comes from, you just roll up your sleeves and go to work, and there's no unemployment. And remember, I told you, if you're unemployed, what you're telling me is all of the work has been done. Honest to God, do you believe that all the work in the world has been done and there's no more work to do? Well, let me tell you, there might not be work at $20 an hour, but there's a whole lot more work at $15 an hour than $20, and there's even more work at $10 an hour than there is at $15, and you'll find that at $5 an hour, there's a lot more jobs and a lot more work that needs to be done than there is at $10 an hour, and at $1 an hour and board and room, there's a lot of work to be done. And boys and girls, I'll guarantee you can get a job anywhere in America for board and room. Board and room. But I'm not so sure that there aren't a lot of you people out there that if you went to work for board and room couldn't produce enough real wealth with your labor to pay your board bills. You're good at playing video games and you can sure get online, but when it comes to useful, productive, meaningful work that actually produces useful, productive, meaningful goods and services, let me tell you, boys and girls, America is woefully short. That's why we're in debt. Now, working for wages is the antithesis of business. So if you want to work for wages, don't let me get in your way. But I'm not looking for a job. And when George Bush says what Americans want is jobs, 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 and a security blanket, not me. I want opportunity, 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 and no security blanket, and then just get the hell out of my way. Never go surety, and you'll never pay another man's debt. Did you know that the Bible prohibits surety? Yeah, when you go co-signing for somebody over here, there's a good possibility that you might end up paying his debt. I've done that a time or two, and sure enough, I ended up paying somebody else's debt, and so I quit doing that. And as soon as I quit practicing surety, I quit paying other people's debts, left more money in my pocket, more money for me to invest in something that's really constructive. Now, a good product sells itself over and over again. A good product or a good service. And when your customer is happy, he tells his friends, and they want to buy more of it. And a lazy businessman is a poor businessman. A lazy businessman is a poor businessman. And incentive and productivity go together. That's where we got to stop right there with number 45, incentive and productivity go together. You give a man incentive and he'll go out and produce. That's why heroin is so prevalent around the world. It's the incentive, $1,400 an ounce. That'll make people produce. Hey, I'm just about out of time. We got to leave it right there. We'll be back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, of course, with more on the black market. Meanwhile, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. There's the signal, says time's up. We've got to leave right now. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.